Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It was really fun to learn some of the names that they could have been. I think caviar was my favourite.
Me too.
That we could have been doing this podcast now about caviar after the screaming stopped.
My friend Guy I was working with at the time was like, Kobe, you have to watch the Bros documentary. I was like, mate, I can't think of anything worse. And said, no, just watch 5 minutes. And then I was just kind of hooked in.
But it starts with an argument, you know, and they're like getting in each other's faces. You think they're going to have a fist fight. All while in the dressing room to get ready to go on this morning.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this episode of Flicks Watch a Podcast. I'm Kobe, and today I'm joined by Genevieve.
Hello.
Helen.
Oh, hello.
Natalie.
Hi.
And we're going to be talking about Bros When the Screaming Stops. Thank you as always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes, and to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his editing skills. Please do remember, guys, to head over to Spotify and Apple Podcasts to give us a 5-star rating and a glowing, super shiny review. Do also join the conversation with us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod, or if you prefer, Instagram at FlixWatcher.
Hello, film fans. Welcome to Flicks Watcher Podcast. Our guests today are Genevieve and Natalie. Over to you, please, Natalie, to say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
It always makes me laugh when you say that because it sounds like a game show, and I know it's not a game show. Well, some ways, maybe. We can get into that later.
There are prizes.
I'm Natalie Jameson. I'm a pop culture journalist and a podcast developer, maker, producer. I co-host the Bestsellers podcast, which is where we talk about popular books. We're very anti-snobbery in that sense. But you also might have heard me popping up on 5 Live or Radio 2, Radio 1 back in the day, talking about all things film, TV, theatre, music.
Oh, beautiful. Who did you normally appear alongside on Radio 1?
On Radio 1, I was with Joe Wiley and also Fern Cotton. Okay. I was your entertainment news voice. And I still get to do that sometimes with Joe on Radio 2, which is great. And yeah, I kind of feel like this is a friendly place to be.
Tell them about making cookies for Jay-Z.
Oh yeah, and
hold on a second. I do recognize Natalie Jameson. I do recognize your name. Absolutely. I apologize for so back in the like 2003 era, I went to work. They hated me for it, but I used to just have one earphone in like all the time, and it was Chris Moyles through till Scott Mills for like 5 years.
Amazing.
And then there was a gap and then there's Zane Lowe. And I stopped listening to Radio 1 when Zane Lowe left. I was like, I think this is my time.
Nice.
Now to leave.
I left Radio 1 not that long after that. So yeah. So hi again from that one earphone. You would have heard me wittering on about lots of things, musicals, and as Jen was just saying, once baked cookies for Jay-Z.
Well, we need to know more about that, surely.
What were the cookies?
Chocolate chip.
Laced with anything?
No, he ate them as well, which, you know, like I literally saw him eat them. That's kind of like rule 101, isn't it? Like if a fan or, you know, anybody that you don't really know gives you something, you don't eat it. But luckily, I'm very trustworthy and they were delicious cookies and Jay-Z loved them.
Beautiful. Who are you in my bottom left-hand side?
Am I in your bottom left-hand side?
Yeah. I think everyone's got a different arrangement.
I'm in the top left, me. hello, I am Genevieve and I'm an entertainment journalist and host of Celebrity Catch-Up, Life After That Thing I Did. It's an unashamedly nostalgic podcast where I chat to the stars of much-loved film, TV and music of the 80s, 90s and early noughties. And we reminisce and talk about how their lives unfolded after that thing they did. And I'm still in shock about it, but the podcast recently won Podcast of the Year at the Independent Podcast Awards, as well as Best Film and TV. So my mantelpiece now has 2 shiny awards sitting on it, and my husband now complains that he has 2 extra things to dust.
Well, I mean, Tell him to shut up.
He's jealous of the awards, I think.
Yeah, I started to listen to your podcast after that. After you, I was there when you got the nomination, sorry, the awards. So congratulations. It is a great podcast and a simple, super simple premise. And hey, you got to talk to Bubbles when we haven't done that yet. So
I did.
There's a little bit pang of jealousy there. But yeah, it's a great show. And do, guys, go and listen to it. There's one podcast on that night which had the best name ever. And that was Clown Sex. I've not listened to it yet.
And it has great artwork too.
And it's got great artwork as well. And still haven't listened to it yet, but I will get around to it. So it's a big up for Clown Sex and also Celebrity Catch Up.
Not into the Clown Sex. I'm not going to go there.
Have you listened to it?
No.
Well, don't diss it until you've tried it. But they, you know, it had a great cover.
He means don't diss it until you've tried listening to Clown Sex. Don't,
just to clarify.
The Clown Sex.
Yeah.
That's right. That's yeah. Thanks for the...
Maybe you could try Clown Sex. I don't know.
What podcast has this turned into? We're here talking today, Genevieve, about Bros After the Screaming Stops. First, before we go into this, I think we're all a similar kind of age group. So I think this sometimes me and Helen are here with people who are just... almost like literally been born, and to mention Bros to them would be like, I don't know what you're talking about. So when you said 80s, 90s and 90s and noughties, I think already potentially on the similar kind of age range. But can you tell us first of all, Genevieve, why you chose this film and give us a synopsis, if there is one.
Yes, there is. So I had a scour on Netflix to find a film that was tied to one of the guests that I've had on Celebrity Catch Up. And it was either Stuart Little or After the Screaming Stops. But I had Luke guest on the podcast in my second season. And so I thought this film would be perfect. And also I thought it'd be interesting because the director of this film, Joe Perlman, also directed the recent Robbie Williams Netflix documentary series, as well as the Lewis Capaldi Netflix documentary. So it's kind of topical at the moment.
So just remind us, is Luke the drummer or the singer?
Luke is the drummer.
The disdain across all your faces here. Were you guys brossettes before we go into the synopsis?
I was not. I was 7 when Bros came out. So while I appreciated the music, I was too young to... I was going to say have fanny flutters, which people probably had when they were 13.
Is that a thing?
They're a little bit older.
My lord.
I'm afraid I've watched Love Island one episode too many. I was a bit too young to have those feelings, those lustful feelings over Bros. So no, I wasn't. Nat, were you?
But I mean, without using that double F alliterative word you just used there. Were you a fan of Bros? I guess Brosette kind of meant you went to the gigs and stuff. I was too young to be a Brosette. sorry. Natalie and Helen, were you fans of Bros when they first came out?
I was a fan of pop music. So by default, yeah. I was a fan of Bros, but they weren't like kind of my favourite of that genre. I was very much into Gloria Estefan around that time. And yeah, like I kind of, I would absolutely dance to it if it was on, like, you know, I Owe You Nothing, I think I liked. I also really like that song Sister. I think I bought the single for Sister, actually. Yeah, and I once met them when I was really little as well, because my dad was doing some work and they were there, but...
just appeared out of nowhere.
I started to say that. I was like, do I really want to say this out loud this early on? Sure. And now I've just opened my big mouth. So in a nutshell, my dad is still around. He was a musical director, a piano player, arranger, and he was Des O'Connor's musical director. Oh, so wow. When I was a kid, I used to go hang out on set of the Des O'Connor TV chat show. So I met some many greats when I was very little, and Bros were among them. So that was very exciting for me, less so for them.
We're 100% at the same age range. Helen, were you a fan of Bros?
No, I remember the song and...
The song? Which one?
I mean, the two songs I remember.
I've just name-checked three, so Helen, which ones are you going with?
The one you haven't name checked.
When will I be famous?
Yeah. I mean, I think they were fine. I was more into Kylie and then Queen a little bit. So yeah, I have met people who were Brossettes, and it's very strange. I didn't have them on my wall. I think that's a thing. If you pulled them out, the posters out of Smash Hits and put them on your wall, then that was a sign that you were a fan.
Fast Forward magazine for me.
One of my neighbours, when I told her that I was speaking to Luke, she got all a bit giggly. She's like, oh my God, I was a massive Brossette. And she had the ripped jeans and the leather jacket and the Grolsch bottle top caps.
I was
going to
say the Grolsch thing, yeah.
Yeah. So she was really heavily into Bross.
Yeah, I guess it's just, I knew the songs, the two songs. And this documentary was like, oh, so they had lots more. And actually they were pretty huge in a way that I didn't comprehend at like 6 or 7, in a way that I thought only Michael Jackson was. And the fact that they shunned Michael Jackson is hilarious to me in ways that I can't really comprehend. But anyway, sorry, tell us the synopsis. You've got 60 seconds, Genevieve, to tell us what happens in this documentary. And the timer starts now.
Okay, so After the Screaming Stops follows Matt and Luke Goss, famous, of course, back in the 80s for being 2/3 of the pop group Brass, in the run-up to a special one-off reunion concert at the O2 Arena, almost 30 years since their last performance at Wembley Stadium and the band breaking up. And as well as showing their final preparations for the concert, it also goes into the history of the group and gives a warts and all view of Matt and Luke's fractured relationship.
Yeah, nice. You said, I think it was a very important thing to say straight away, the 2/3, because they mentioned the bass playing one, the one with dark hair, like once, and then after that he's in the screen a few times, but after that they never reference him at all. I always thought it was a bit, I always felt sorry for him. I don't know why.
Oh, I wouldn't do. He's like gone on to be an artist manager, I think. I don't know if he still does manage Anastasia, but that was one of his, I think.
Yes, he does. Yep, still does.
Yeah.
Is she still relevant?
If you want to know what she's doing now, I had her on the podcast last season.
You're welcome, Jen. You're welcome.
Thank you.
And Craig.
And Craig is her manager. And I spoke with Craig to get her on the podcast.
So, I mean, guys, whether you like, I had no idea what Bross were like before. This is the second time I've watched this documentary, but I had no idea what they were like as people. And to me, they, I don't know, bonkers kind of sums it up. Natalie, is that fair? Is that a fair assumption? Is that what you remember from when you were kids with on the Desert Corner Tonight show?
I think I've overplayed that already. So I was an avid reader of Smash Hits, and I don't think I got that side of the Bross boys from Smash Hits. But I think it's kind of fascinating rewatching it. So I watched it when the documentary first came out, and then I rewatched it again today, actually, ahead of this recording, because I wanted it to be really fresh. And I remember, it leaves me with like sadness and joy at the same time, because that sibling rivalry between them is intense. And I just wanted to mention, like, their opening shot is like a close-up on both of their faces separately. And the first face that you get in close-up in kind of high definition is Luke Goss. And I just wondered how much they might have wrangled between who actually got the first shot in the film, because you know they probably did.
I mean, yeah, Genevieve, when you spoke to the drummer one.
Luke.
Was this before or after the documentary first came out?
It was after.
Okay. So did you reflect on it at all? Basically, guys, as you're listening now, go to Celebrity Catch Up and download the Luke Goss episode and listen to that. And then anything that Genevieve says now will be, obviously, you'll know more than me and Helen know right now, because this is something we've not listened to. But we will do as soon as this recording finishes. But carry on, Genevieve.
Yes, we talked a bit about the concert. So we were talking about, like, in terms of like the preparation up to the concert, the 10-hour days he spent drumming, rehearsing. He said that he lost 5 pounds of body weight every day through sweat, just through like drumming constantly all the time. All the blisters he got from doing it, because he hadn't done it for so long. There'd be blood splattered on the drum kit. And I did ask him about, because I was surprised that it's such a warts and all view of their relationship. You would expect typically, I mean, obviously we know it now with like Robbie Williams' documentary, his whole thing was he wants to show this, you know, the negative side stuff. But I think, you know, the time when this documentary came out, it probably wasn't as common for it to be so raw and to show this kind of negative side to people. And I was thinking like, you know, wow, that's, I'm surprised that they would have signed off on this, especially like the opening scenes of the documentary starts with an argument, you know, and they're like getting in each other's faces. You think they're going to have a fist fight, all while in the dressing room to get ready to go on this morning where everyone wants to have a
it did really make me want to like Google that this morning appearance. Yeah. I still haven't done, just to see, like, try and get the body language after that argument.
Yeah. But I did say to him, like, you know, wow, what, how did you feel coming into this and keeping all this stuff in? And he said anything other than the truth would be misleading. So that's why he wanted to do it. And I think also the other reason why I wanted to speak to Luke rather than Matt is because you got this real sense from the documentary that he is, Matt was always the one that everybody loved. He was the front man, he was the singer, Luke was in the back, he was the drummer. People thought he was the spare, like he didn't really have anything to offer because he didn't sing. Matt was the front man, Matt did everything. And that comes across when you speak to him as well, talking about that time in their rise to fame on their first album. Although he played drums on that first album, he didn't play drums on it. They had drum beats that did it. And he said that he just felt like he lost everything. He came into this band as the drummer, and then on their first album, he didn't even get to play on it. But then in the second and third albums, they fought for him to play because he was a live drummer. And you do get that sense that he has been burned by his experience in the band and the negative press that they received. I guess it's very typical of the British press that we like to build someone up on the way up and then we like to tear them down after, and the amount of hate that they received was crazy. Death threats. Luke touches a bit in that in our chat, talks about like death threats he's had. Crazy to have on one side loads of screaming girls where the police have got to come to because Oxford Street is suddenly rammed full of hormones and they've got to deal with it, to then suddenly actually there's a bomb threat, don't get off a plane. You know, it's just crazy.
What I thought was interesting is like you say, I think this is, I'm not sure if it's kicked off the trend for these documentary of people in pop culture, but when I was watching I watched the Wham one, which I thought was really interesting. And I was quite surprised at how amicable everything was between Andrew Ridgeley and George Michael, to the fact that Andrew Ridgeley's like, look, dude, you do your thing. You take over. You have Careless Whisper by yourself. I'll take a step back and just like chill out for a few decades. I thought that was almost going to be the same for the Bros one, because I thought, you know, they're brothers. They might have some spats, but also, you know, they've lived together since, you know, in the womb. But it was quite interesting to see that that was so not the case. And the way that they fought for, like, Andrew Ridgeley to play music on the albums and stuff like that was not the way they fought for Luke to drum on Bros. And it's really interesting how the industry does just favour things or disfavour things, or just tries to chew people up and spit them out, or just uses people as puppets for their money-making schemes. It's really unsavory in that respect, but it's interesting how different bands take that, or different groups or different sets of people, how they experience different things. And then, like, another one I watched recently is a Sylvester Stallone one, where they just didn't want him to be anywhere near the camera, essentially, unless he was a thug. And it was like, no, I've written Rocky, this is for me. And no, it's $500,000, I will just buy it off of you. And he was like, no, I'm gonna do it. So the industry is then as horrible. I don't think it's probably that much better, I guess, but it's interesting how this is coming to the front into these documentaries. Helen, have you seen any of these documentaries apart from the Bros one? Robbie Williams, was he one of your people?
No, I wasn't really a Take That fan. I'm not sure about the Robbie one.
Ladies and gentlemen, Natalie is just
a little bit of Natalie's dying inside.
wait, what are those words? I'm not much of a Take That fan. I didn't. There's a rip in the time-space continuum.
I'd moved on to indie by then, but
they can coexist. Can I just say, I was a massive indie kid as well. You know, it's room for everyone.
Because I do like George Michael, and I've got a bit of a soft spot for him. But I mean, what we've said so far kind of gives this impression of this quite serious, sort of deep, sort of mining the depths of emotion and going into some dark places. But I would just like to read out something that happens quite early on. Quite early on, Matt Goss says, the letters H-O-M-E are so important because they personify the word home. This kind of sets the tone for the documentary. There's some other, I mean, there's many. Matt, again, Rome wasn't built in a day.
The singing one.
And fuck me, that's true. But we don't have the time that Rome had. So this is just a taster. I mean, you get
don't
to
forget,
find...
Don't forget the English conquer crisis.
Well, I was maybe going to leave that for people who haven't quite got there, but there's...
TV moment of the year, that we can't ignore that.
And now we can't play fucking Conkers in the UK. I mean, you can.
You can what, sorry?
You can play Conkers, but it's quite an opener. And also, it was really fun to learn some of the names that they could have been. I think Caviar was my favourite.
Me too.
That we could have been doing this podcast now about Caviar after the screaming stopped.
We liked it was Epitome. Except they showed Epitome written on the screen, but they said Epitome.
Mockumentary-esque, isn't it?
There's also a painting of his bulldog as well. Now
holding a bear.
That would be normal, but he had him painted holding a pint of beer. It wasn't quite the documentary experience I was watching. I didn't really know what to expect. I thought it'd be fairly bog standard, but from the start, you're like, this is going to be different, I feel.
And I think that's what's brilliant about this documentary is that you might go into it for the nostalgia if you're a Bros fan, but you do not have to be a Bros fan to watch this film whatsoever. There's this bigger story about the relationship between two brothers, and it's so interesting. My husband reluctantly watched it with me, and he was like, oh, you know, he didn't care about Bros, and he was like, oh, I don't know, but he sat with me and he enjoyed it. By the end, he was like, oh, that was really good, because he can, you know, he's got a brother and he empathized with the brother relationship and the rows and living in your brother's shadow and all that kind of stuff. And I'll save my conclusion for the recommendation scores, but that's all I'll say.
I do want to pick up the Conker sequence is still one of the things that makes me wake up laughing sometimes. I saw this 2 years ago, at least 2 years ago when I first came, but maybe 3 years ago, because I think it's pre-pandemic. And my friend, guy I was working with at the time, was like, Kobe, you have to watch the Bros documentary. I was like, mate, I can't think of anything worse. And said, no, just watch 5 minutes. And then I was just kind of hooked in. But that scene where they revisit their childhood home and said, our favourite toy was a dart.
And we throw it up in the air.
And we had to play chicken until the person who moved last lost. And one day, the dart stuck in my rib. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? And then Grandad pulled it out and they started chucking it about again. And that's when and it's like, but you can't play with Conkers. But what are you hell? What,
and it was, what's the
what
point?
Kind of nonsense is like, this? Yeah.
what's the next logical thing? So let's bring back the Conkers and give kids darts to lob around? Like, anyway, my favourite quote from Matt, because as you say, there are many, was the news is the thinking man's reality show. Just let that sit for a minute.
My favourite one from Matt was I made a conscious decision because of Stevie Wonder to not be superstitious.
Yeah, I wrote that one down as well. I think the thing with what's so fascinating about this documentary, and I think the best documentaries are when you don't know what you're going to get, right? Because I think a lot of us probably know and watch lots of things now where they've almost already written a story arc for a documentary before they've done any interviews. And I'm not interested in that. I want to see what people say. And then you kind of let that lead you and see where it's going to take. And I think that Matt Goss, my reading of it anyway,
The singing one.
The lead singer, the younger twin, although he feels he acts like the older twin a lot of the time, is that he is that ideal definition of the hero of his own story, in that everything he relates to in life, he relates to himself. And it's almost done without malice, if you see what I mean, because he doesn't know how to be any other way. But when you place somebody like that in any kind of real world environment, it's just so bizarre.
I mean, some of the arguments they had in rehearsal.
Oh, the pyro. That was a brilliant
argument. Oh, yeah. It got the proper hump with, like, the drummer one taking a piss out of him, which is I think that would be a low level insult in any of the comments. But he really took that to heart, didn't he? And that really, like, got him riled. But when the drummer one was trying to have his, like, hey, can you just hold on? You wait a beat before you come in, because I think it'll sound really good. And no one else wanted to do that. I thought that was really tense, because it seemed like everyone, all the musicians, were on Luke's side straight away for some. They kind of done that thing where they spied the weak and the stronger one, and they sided with the stronger one in there. And I thought that was really harsh in a way. But also, it was kind of hilarious for our purposes to watch it. I just felt it was like a Christopher Guest documentary a lot of the time. And some of those lines you've said, I'm like, I don't know, how does that happen? Do people really say that? Because they're not stupid, but also
it could have been, outtakes from Popstar Never Stop, yeah, Never Stopping.
Yeah, it could have been.
Which I love. And it's,
I think the issue is
rebel.
That Matt went to Vegas, right? And he got his own show, and he's lived in a world where people don't say no to him. And he's had every whim indulged, and it's made him this person. So the world probably sees him as mad as a box of frogs. And that, you know, that's what he's like.
Is there anything else you want to say before we head to the scores, guys?
I was just going to say, I think what's fascinating about this documentary, and also the Robbie one, which, as you said, Jen, is from the same director, is that validation that they're all seeking from the British press. And again, I'm no psychologist, but I just think it's kind of weird that the press, certainly at those times when it was a lot harsher in the 80s and 90s, was almost like some weird, like, remote parental figure, where they're kind of trying to seek approval from the parental press, if you like, when they've got so much, like, love and support from people around them and fans and people loving and telling them they're great the whole time. And yet it's just like that one thing they're still looking to be validated by the press. And I don't know, I find it fascinating that that's so prevalent in both the Bross documentary and the Robbie one too.
Before we go into the scores, actually, how many of these other recent kind of spates of documentaries have you seen? I talked about the Wham one, Arnie's got one, Beckham's got one. Are you enjoying this generally? Are you interested when they come out? What's your kind of thoughts on them as they appear? Helen?
I haven't seen any of them. I mean, I might be tempted to the Arnie one, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's how I've seen some of the best bits from the Beckham one, which look quite entertaining. And I'm a big fan of Amy Winehouse one, Asif Kapadia's Amy.
Yeah, that's not one of these ones, is it?
No.
This is when, yeah.
So
that's obviously an Oscar winning.
I mean, I don't mind watching an hour and 37 minutes of Bross. I'm not going to sit down and watch 8 episodes, I don't think, of a story. I think you've got to really, really, really be into it, I think.
This film may not have won any Oscars, but it did win a BAFTA.
Did it?
Yes. So.
Lunacy. Well, I mean, what are your thoughts, Jen and Natalie, for this recent spates of, because it has literally, it's been in the past year, there's just popped up loads of them.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I have watched most of them, but then that's kind of like the work I do as well. Like, I've always loved popular culture, and, you know, I sort of love seeing the documentaries, but I am always quite fascinated, because often, again, because of my job, I am a geek, it's fine, because I know quite a lot about some of these stories. I always think it's fascinating what's left out of the documentaries. And, you know, this is people telling their story from their perspective, so it's already sort of biased in one way, if you like. And I think what works so well with the Bross documentary is because it does seem to still be so raw, and that sibling relationship and those arguments happen, and they signed off on it and they were fine with it. And their end conclusion is like, yep, you know, but like, we're still brothers and this kind of brought us back together, even though we hated each other for a lot of it. That's kind of fascinating. And it doesn't feel like there's any artifice in that, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, maybe they've got less to try and sell in that they're kind of, you know, at that point they were doing kind of the comeback tour, but had kind of sort of...
Comeback gig, singular.
Well, gig, yeah, because what happened to those other dates, we'll never know. But I guess it depends where you are in that career path and whether this is, you know, the documentary is like a stepping stone to something, or whether it kind of feels like a bit of a public therapy session for them both, really, and a bit of a chance to, you know, talk about like being made to kind of perform and be public when they'd experienced personal tragedy and things like that. Whereas it's not them going, you know, we're ready, we're back in action, like come book us or anything like that.
I wondered how much it cost to just put on this one show.
Mm. With the pyro. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, as Nat says, you know, kind of the same as an entertainment journalist, you kind of end up watching all these documentaries as because you have to be across them all. And I guess linked to my podcast, because it's nostalgia as well, I have this other interest in it because a lot of them are going down this nostalgia route. And I think that's just, you know, nostalgia is just quite popular at the moment coming out of lockdown. At least I found that nostalgia was very popular around that time, because in times of uncertainty, people turn to things that bring them comfort, and nostalgia is that thing. So that's why people were rewatching all these old box sets, and suddenly all these rewatch podcasts turned up. Everyone was turning to something that made them feel safe and secure. And I think that's why all these things are sprouting out of nowhere now, to making us remember the better times when things were simpler and we were younger and we didn't have bills and mortgages and all those things to worry about.
Well, on that bombshell, let's head to the scores.
Hello, I'm Martin.
I'm Sam.
And every week we get together on our podcast Song by Song to discuss the music of Tom Waits.
Waits is a writer, musician and performer. You might know him from his four decades of songs like What's He Building In There, Downtown Train, Martha, Rain Dogs.
Or you might have seen him in films like Dracula, The Fisher King, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, or if you made it that far, Licorice Pizza.
We're joined every week by guests from various backgrounds and disciplines, and together we take a close listen to his work, analysing the topics and tones he uses in his music, and honestly engaging with one of the most interesting voices of his generation.
Listen to our latest season or dive into our back catalogue by visiting songbysongpodcast.com or search for Song by Song in your podcatcher of choice.
So welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. They are always out of five, and you can have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, please, Genevieve, with your recommendability.
Okay, so I'm going to give it five. And I still maintain that you do not need to be a Bros fan to watch this. Kobe, as you said, somebody said recommended it to you, said you had to watch it, and you were like, no, and you still watched it, and, you know... You still watched it rather than not watching it. So I think everyone can watch this. It's more than a film about Bros. It's a film about the relationship between two brothers. And I think everyone can identify with that.
Natalie?
I was going to go with a solid 4, but I might bump it up to 4.5 because I just think it's fascinating that, as you say, I think Bros might have passed quite a lot of people by. Obviously, he weren't around at the time, because they're not like, take that as in they're not played on the radio still, they're not kind of streamed or talked about as widely. So, you know, I think it's a good bit of pop culture knowledge to get across.
Although I would add that now that Matt Goss was on Strictly last year, and Luke Goss is an actor now and stuff, I think maybe there might be on the radar of younger people now. So maybe that has attraction for them too.
But the drummer one's been an actor for a while, hasn't he? He was in
Hellboy,
one of the Blades,
Hellboy,
for example. Hellboy,
Blade 2.
And because the film starts like, Guillermo del Toro loves him. And I was like, well, which films has he been in recently?
He did at the time.
Helen?
I'm going to give it a solid 4. It's not the documentary that you're expecting. So if you haven't seen it, like, I don't think there's any way that it can really prepare you for what it is. I think that definitely for us, having grown up around Bros and kind of had that knowledge of them and the songs when we were growing up and how pop culture was then, and kind of grown a little bit with them and kind of seen them sort of go into obscurity and then come back a little. I'm not sure whether someone who's never heard of them and perhaps quite a bit younger would kind of get the same enjoyment that we've had out of it. So I still think it's very enjoyable, but I can't give any more than a 4.
I'm going to put, yeah, because I was recommended it, a hard recommend. And then when I told people on Facebook at the time, like, I've just watched the Bros documentary, loads of people piled in and was like, mate, how funny is it? So it is one of those ones where I think if someone's balks at it, and if they've known Bros, and I think that's a fairly large caveat that Helen said there. If you have no idea who Bros are, I think this will just be a story of two twin, I don't know what words you...
Incredibly good looking for 55, like whatever.
Are they 55?
Their diet
is a whole layer? Oh wow.
Is, you know, that can't be sniffed at. Like they're looking very healthy for 55.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would be a hard recommend. So I'm going to go for 4.3. Genevieve, repeat viewing score.
I'm gonna go for a 4 with the caveat that I watched this originally, 2019 when it came out on, because the first time it was out, kind of buried away on BBC4, and then it kind of went viral for all the memes, for all the things we've been talking about, and then they put it on BBC2, and then I saw it then, and then I hadn't seen it again until last weekend in preparing for this. And I think watching it again, there were some things that I was like, I'd forgotten how funny some bits of it were, and the disbelief that, oh my God, they've said this and they've kept this in. And I enjoyed watching it a second time. So I think it's definitely got repeatability, but I would caveat that it's not something that you would watch like every couple of months or once a year. You need a little gap between it to appreciate it again, but you definitely can watch it a second time and get something out of it that you didn't the first time.
So was it 4?
4.
Natalie?
I think I would give it a 3 because I saw it when it first came out. I was actually, I don't want this to sound wanky, but the Freelancer's Lament, right? So this came out, it was part of the London Film Festival actually in 2018. Yeah.
How was it?
And because I am that geek that scours the brochure, I was like, oh, that sounds fascinating. And it was part of that. And I could not get a story away on it. I pitched it to so many places and nobody was interested because Bros were not on anybody's radar then. And I was like, seriously, like, you know, like we've all been saying, you've just got to watch it. You've got to hear what they say. It's so funny. And then I haven't seen it again since I rewatched it for this. And like you were saying, Jen, there were lots of bits I'd forgotten, lots that made me laugh and smile. But I think I'd watch it for a little bit if it was on again, but I don't think I'd kind of keep going back to it again and again.
So what's that score?
3.
3, sorry, yeah. Helen?
So I thought it was much more recent. Like, I don't remember it coming out at all. Just not. But the fact that it was maybe buried on TV probably didn't really help. So this was my first time watching it. I don't think it's going to be one that I'm going to watch a lot, but I think I probably would watch it again and would definitely kind of try and watch it with someone who hasn't seen it before, just to try and like see their reaction. And I think because it's just so bizarre and some of the things they're kind of coming out with kind of pass you by, I think I probably would revisit it just to kind of, you know, enjoy it and kind of go, yeah, they did say that. Although kind of the end, they kind of drag out the rehearsals a little bit. So I'm going to go for a 3 as well for this one. Unusual for a documentary.
I'm going to go for 2.5 now. I don't think I would have watched it again if it hadn't been suggested here. Not to say it was a chore. There's some documentaries which I'll never, ever watch again.
Please say which ones.
I enjoyed them. Things like The Act of Killing.
Haven't seen that one. Doesn't sound like one that's for me.
No, it's not. I mean, it's fascinating, but not a pleasant watch. But this, It was an easy watch, and I was waiting for the conquer bit. I was waiting for the fights that happened in the restaurant and in the rehearsals. I was waiting for, you know, little bits to happen in a way you would do for like a standard narrative film. In a way, you're waiting for the best bits to happen. But I don't think I'll watch it that often. So yeah, 2.5. Small screen score. Genevieve.
I think this is quite high because it doesn't need to be watched on a big screen. This did have a cinema release, a very limited cinema release before it went to TV. And it's definitely something that you can watch on the small screen, laptop, tablet, phone, and you don't lose anything at all. I guess when it comes to the concert bit at the end, you might appreciate it on a big screen to get that big kind of, you know, arena feel of being, you know, concert show. But otherwise, I think it's perfect for the small screen. So I think that's like a 4.5.
Natalie?
Yeah, similar. I think I'd give it a 4 for small screen watchability because it's all about what they're saying that is the best stuff of this documentary, you know, and you can kind of, you can catch those Mattisms. Luke has a few, but Matt's are probably more memorable maybe. Oh, I feel like we're playing into their narrative of the sibling rivalry. I didn't mean to do that. But yeah, so I think the small screen is fine.
And what was that score, sorry?
4.
Sorry, I don't know. I keep missing these scores. Helen?
Yeah, so like there's nothing about this film that says I need to be seen on the big screen. But like how fun would this be to watch with a full cinema with half the people who've got no idea about Ross and the other half are like, I was there and I screamed and I kissed one of them. Like, how much fun would that be? How much fun to go back in time and create a screening for that? So that's not going to happen. So I think for the benefit of it, I'm going to give it a 5 because it's on TV and it's made for that. But how fun would that screening be?
Yeah, I like the idea of watching it in a cinema with other people, but I think they'd have to have known who Bross works. Otherwise, I think half the audience would just be like, who are these weirdos? But I think a bit of context there. So people like myself who know who Bross were, sang some of the songs, would have danced to them at university when they did like an 80s night, when Will I Be Famous comes on, but also think they've got no interest in watching the documentary. I think that's the perfect niche of other people. I'd love to see watching this at the same time. Engagement, so I've gone for 5 there for small screen score. Engagement score, Genevieve.
So if we're talking your strict definition of how difficult would it be to turn it off once you've started watching it, I mean, you said yourself the first time you watched it, you didn't think you were going to like it and you had to keep watching. And I think that's, you know, as I said, you don't need to be a Bross fan. My husband proved that. He thought he wasn't going to like it and then got totally engrossed in this wider story of sibling rivalry. And I think, you know, if you weren't a Bross fan and you couldn't be convinced to watch it, you wouldn't be watching it anyway. So you wouldn't even factor on the engagement score. So this is purely for people that are watching it. I think it's so engrossing. It's so interesting to watch this relationship. I'm going to give it a 4.7.
Natalie?
Yeah, I'm kind of mulling over this one because my initial thought was that I could probably, you know, I have power over my own mind. I can switch it off if I want to. Like, it's not like a typical film in that way where you're kind of waiting for the next scene or the next big action sequence, or you kind of, there are nice vignettes all the way through it. But then, you know, repeat viewing it today, I was locked in. I was kind of there for the duration. So maybe it should be a bit higher than I was initially giving it credit for. And I also would really like to see, like, you know, my daughter's just turned 15 and I'd love for her to watch it actually and kind of see her engagement in it. But I think even if you don't know the characters, you would be hooked by what they're saying, even if you didn't know anything about them. So I'm going to give it a 3.7.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 3.5. I could not resist the urge to hit Wikipedia while I was watching it and be like, how old are they? This is very mysterious. And then kind of ended up in that whole sort of wormhole of Wikipedia and finding out, oh, they lived in Lewisham. Like, oh, that's interesting. And all of those kind of things while I was still watching it. So a 3.5.
Yeah, I think for first viewing, it's probably a 5. Second viewing, I was kind of waiting for the snippable social media.
Conkers.
Yeah, those kind of bites. So I'm going to go for a 4 overall. And that gives us an overall score of 4.04375, which for a documentary, or for any film, that's a decent score. That's a decent score. But for a documentary, I think that's got to be up there, certainly. So we had a tweet, didn't we?
Did indeed.
Yeah, everyone do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. Follow us because we do chat about stuff on Netflix, just generally, and films also. But also, you can interact with us when we're about to record a podcast episode. Look out for a tweet saying something similar to this. We're watching Bros After the Screaming Stops with Genevieve from CelebrityCatchUpPod.com and at Nat Jameson. Have you seen it? Tell your thoughts and your score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out on this podcast. So we had one, I believe, Genevieve.
Yes, it's from Retro Ramble blog, and they said, entertaining madness. At times you wonder if it's actually a parody written by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant. 4 out of 5. Quite similar to our score, right?
Yeah. Perfect. Natalie, Genevieve, can you tell them where we can find you online and say goodbye to the listeners?
Hi, it's Natalie. You can find me with the Bestsellers podcast, where hopefully we'll encourage a love of reading, but also we do quite a lot of film adaptations on there as well. So we've had various people from Lee Child to Jodie Pico to Linda LaPlante to Dawny Walton. You can discover new books as well. So on Twitter, because that's what it will always be called in my brain, I'm just at Nat_Jameson, and Jameson is JAMIESON. And on Insta, which I'm relatively new to because I put all my eggs in the Twitter basket full of a took. On Insta, I'm just at Natalie Jameson because I got it early, but then I just never did anything with it.
Genevieve?
And you can find me, hear me at Celebrity Catch Up Life After That Thing I Did. It's celebritycatchup.com, or just search for Celebrity Catch Up on the social platforms and you should find me. But yeah, come check it out. We've had great guests. You know, if we're talking film stars, Alan Ruck guested on the podcast. We reminisced about Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Leah Thompson came on to talk about Space Camp and Back to the Future. Rose McGowan came on to talk about Scream. Judd Nelson reminisced about The Breakfast Club. I blushed hard during that interview because it was in the middle of summer and I couldn't open a window or put a fan on because it would have ruined the mic, but it was boiling, but I was like, had a massive crush on him. Thankfully our cameras were off so he couldn't see me literally sweating. Nick Frost, Dexter Fletcher, stars from American Pie, Clueless, Police Academy. That's a very big range. Come and have a listen.
Fantastic. Yeah, I would definitely recommend that everyone do that. Thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure to talk about the Bros with sane people. And we'll see you all later.
Thanks for coming on.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Thank you.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes and Rockwood Audio's editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.